This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Rob Schaefer, joined today by my good pal Tony Gill. On the show, we discuss whether the Bulls' defensive struggles are something to be worried about long term, Lauri Markkanen's enigmatic performance against the Phoenix Suns, and what the state of the Bulls' playoff hunt is on the heels of a five-game losing streak.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Hashtag always recording, Rob.
Hashtag always recording. Me, management Tony, Commander Brad, Captain Brad. I can't remember what we're calling Brad. But yeah, let's get it started. This is the Bulls Talk Podcast. It is just myself, Rob Schaefer, and Tony Gill today. The old heads are out of the office. We're going to do
Unsupervised.
We're going to do our best to keep it professional, keep this podcast alive for when Jason and KC get back next week. But we got a lot to get to. So we're coming, we'll be in your ears on Friday morning in advance of the Bulls taking on the Utah Jazz. It's a really tough matchup. Not only do they have the best record in the league, they got the best point differential, net rating, a historically good 9.1 points per 100 possession. They're outscoring their opponents by. And the Bulls, all of which to say, it'll be a tall task for the Bulls to snap a five-game losing streak that they are currently on. It has not looked good over these last couple games. There are extenuating circumstances. Zach LaVine missed their last game against the Phoenix Suns with an ankle injury that he had been playing through and had clearly hampered him. The trade deadline happened. You may have heard of it. Nikola Vucevic is a Bull, along with four others, who Billy Donovan has kind of been integrating in the rotation, toying with, seeing how these guys can play together. They're clearly still adjusting to that. But regardless, this is a team that, with their trade deadline activity, made a statement that they wanted to make a playoff push. They're still in position to do that. But the more losses that stack up here, it gets a little bit bleaker. So they'll be looking to turn it around. It'll be tough. Jazz, obviously the Nets at home on Sunday. But we're going to look backwards for this episode, Tony. I got a few numbers for you from this five-game losing streak to kind of segue us into our first topic here, which is the defense. In the Bulls' last five games, they have a 118.4 defensive rating. That means they're allowing over 118 points per 100 possessions. That ranks 29th in the NBA over that span. They're allowing 116 points per game, and their opponents are shooting almost 51% from the field. That last percentage would be dead last in the NBA. The defense has been a major, major issue. It's been a major issue all year, pretty much since those two season opening blowouts. It got a little bit better for a time. Now with all the new additions, they've certainly regressed. I think Billy Donovan and any of the players would tell you that. My question to you, and then I'll weigh in after, is, are you worried long-term about this defense, or is it something that can be corrected the more reps and the more time that this new look team gets together?
I think within the margins, right? Like, we still got to see, when you look at the individual players, they still don't have many two-way players, you know, on this roster. Either you're super offensive dude or you're really locked in defensive dude. And, you know, contending teams and playoff teams don't really have a team full of those guys. And that was, like, out of all the concerns about having Nikola Vucevic.
There you go.
Vuce. That was the biggest one, right, was his defensive abilities. And they still haven't found the right pairing for him to kind of fix or help him in that aspect. They're still getting easy layups, easy buckets to the rim. It seems like to me every time there's a defensive possession where the ball is inserted in the post, they go across lane. Vooch is like slapping the arm and doing the, yeah, I fouled him. Like, come on, man. Like, stop. Like, you can't give up that easy. Yeah. So, I mean, I thought that having him, there would at least be a body that can protect the rim, where before with Wendell and Daniel Gafford, it just seems like big men were just kind of blowing through them with zero resistance, and it's starting to feel the same way. Like, and I don't know how much of that can be fixed versus maybe they do some better rotations, maybe they communicate better after knowing each other a bit more. But the truth is, this is probably not going to, this grouping as it is probably not going to be a good defensive team. I think that's just a fact.
I agree with that. I'm concerned about it too, certainly more than the offense, which no matter how much they've sputtered a little bit since the trade deadline, I'm just not going to get concerned long-term about that. I still, when Zach is 100%, I believe in the potency of his pairing with Vooch. I believe in just kind of the shooting they have. I think Billy Donovan, to this point in the season, it has pretty much proven to be a much better offensive coach than a defensive coach to this point. So I'm not worried about the offense. I am worried about the defense for one point that you said, and then I'll add one thing onto the Vucevic point. The personnel is just up and down the roster is just not there at the level that I think even the front office would tell you that they want it to be long-term. That's why Arturis Karnišovas comes out and says, hey, we're not done on trade deadline day in terms of building this team, this roster into what it's ultimately going to be. Because, and we knew this going into the trade, I think the first few games have kind of let that reality sink in a little bit. And now obviously Zach's out, so we kind of have to withhold final judgment until he's back 100% completely. But the Zach Vucevic pairing, when those are your two best players, I don't think it's unsurvivable defensively in the optimal context, but you have to have infrastructure around them. And that's not only probably a defensive, a little bit more defense at the guard spot. It's a two-way wing. Now you have Patrick Williams, but you probably, you know, if his optimal position is the four, we'll see. You probably want another guy on the wing that can play both ends. That's why the Garrett Temple absence, which we'll get to in a little bit against Phoenix, hurts too. And it's interesting, as much as you hit on the Vooch thing, and I agree to a degree, I actually think the biggest problem with this defense, and it's something that has been a consistent theme, not only with Billy Donovan, but talking to players too, from Patrick Williams to Daniel Tice, when we talked to him after practice the other day, is
the swallowed on the screens. Pause.
Swallowed on the screens. Well, yeah, no, you're exactly right. I won't describe it in such terms, but the physicality at the point of attack, and I know it sounds lazy to say that they need to be physical, they need to be tougher. Like, oh, that's so easy. It's not easy, but it's something that players and coaches have hit on really since the start of the season. They've really, really hit on it over the course of the past week with what has ailed this team defensively. I mean, even look at that Patrick Williams block on Ayton from the Suns game. I mean, that's one of the most ridiculous defensive plays I've ever seen in my life. I don't want to take away from how just insurmountable of a feat that is. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of the Bam block on Tatum from the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Just how do you have the forearm or wrist strength or anything or just the timing to be able to do that? But, and Pat, and I'm not speaking out of turn because Patrick, this is what he said to us postgame. That play was produced because Pat got hung up on a screen towards the beginning of the play. Booker got into the teeth of the defense with very little resistance, and it puts Vucevic in a scenario where it's like, I kind of have to either step up or drop back. I have to pick a lane here. And he stepped up, and it created an easy lob opportunity that Patrick Williams just has the crazy athletic gifts to muck the up. Play, but that's
the play problem. Overall was a bad defensive possession.
Exactly, exactly.
Saved by the athletic feats of Patrick Williams.
Yeah, and that's why you see so many guards. I mean, it was a thing with big men earlier in the year, just having career nights against the Bulls seemingly every night. It's now become a thing with perimeter players. I think that point of attack, defense, and physicality. I mean, it says something. Daniel Tice, after the first practice he had with the team, which was after his debut, he basically came out and was like, yeah, the first thing I noticed when I was on the floor with these guys was we're not physical enough. Like, it needs to be a mentality. It needs to be a – you got to come into a game and, like, want to annoy somebody to really get into them.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be interesting when you talk about the front court pairings for Vucevic. I don't know what the best remedy is going to be. I know for a fact probably that it's not going to be Lauri Markkanen and Vucevic playing next to each other. So we'll see how much, you know, maybe in certain spot moments, but not certainly for the lion's share of minutes in a game. I think Thad and Tice both theoretically can cover up for some of the defensive things that ails Nikola Vucevic, but it's going to be something that it's going to be something that's a work in progress. There is a level where these guys all playing together is going to help just defensive coverages, meshing, gelling, knowing where guys are going to be. That'll all help. But to your point, I don't think they can get to being above average, which is why it becomes so much more important for Zach to rest this ankle, get back 100%, because this is a team that is just going to have to outscore people, really. It's going to have to be such a high-powered offensive team that they can mask the defensive issues, at least for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, like, to your point of attack, and what Rob is saying is that, look, this is the NBA level. Guys are going to screen you, right? Like, they're big bodies, they're strong, and typically you're a guard getting screened by a much larger human being. But the way that they play their defensive scheme, which is that drop zone coverage, it doesn't work if the guards don't fight through the screens exactly. as much as they can off every screen. And it's not saying that they're going to get through every single screen. Somebody's going to clip you eventually. But the point is to rush that ball handler where he doesn't have all the options, right? Once you are out of the picture, the ball handler, and specifically the reason why guards have been getting hot on opposing teams is because they're usually ready to score because the bigs are either so far back that they have all this time to figure out, okay, I can pull up for this mid-range, I can drive past them, or I can find the open guy. Like, there's so many options because the guard who's getting screened is just completely out of the play. So, and I get that takes time and that takes practice. You know, you got to, it's more routine of habit where you got to feel through screens with that offhand. You got to communicate with the person that's behind you. Where is it coming? And you don't see any of that, really. They just kind of are resigned to the fact, hey, I'm just going to take this guy. And then that's how you get all these cross matches. I mean, almost every other possession. Like, if they want to play this defensive style, which they've stuck to basically all season, yeah. those guards, they need to be better. And the only way is, like, you guys got to do what you got to do to get through those screens. Like, mm-hmm. you have to. And I don't know if he's saying that. Obviously, they don't have a lot of coaching time to go over the proper form and technique to get through screens. But you at least got to tell them, like, you got this doesn't work. And it hasn't been working.
Yeah. The problem is, though, when you look at a guy on the back line like Vucevic, who you've invested so much in and need so much on the offensive end, I just get the sense that that is the scheme that fits him the best because he's not someone that's going to be up at the level of the screen every possession. He's not someone that moves his feet that well on the perimeter like that. That's why I, in theory, like the fit of a guy like Tice or a guy like Thad next to him, because they can get up on like a 1-4 pick and roll and be up at the level and hounding guards. And Thad and Tice both have the reputation also as kind of vocal presences on the court. So to your point about kind of communicating stuff, you would think that they might be better. In that respect, but I think it's really going to be a challenge with Vooch at the center spot with that if they can't improve their screen navigation. Like you said, Garrett Temple will help them there, but it's a real, real issue. And then you have a situation where, you know, Billy Donovan and Patrick Williams both last night made a point to say, I think we got better defensively as the game went along. And maybe that's true, but Patrick said something perfect. He was like, by the time we were putting together strong defensive possessions on Booker, he was unconscious. Like, yeah. he's in the rhythm. That's what happens when you're playing against, you know, the 400 best basketball players in the world every night, and then you have a guy like Devin Booker, who's an elite among those elite. It's just a tough thing to overcome. Let's shift gears here to a guy whose defense we've talked a fair amount this year, but we're not necessarily going to get on that too much in this podcast. But Lauri Markkanen, someone who was taken out of the Bulls starting lineup in the second post-trade deadline game against the Warriors. Billy Donovan tried the Markkanen-Vucevic starting front court against the Spurs. It was frankly a disaster defensively, and he adapted. Credit to Billy Donovan for doing that. Thad Young was the starting power forward in the Warriors game. Then obviously you lose Zach LaVine, you lose Garrett Temple after 2 minutes, comes up with a hamstring ailment in the Warriors game, and you're without Coby White. So without much in the way of guard or, you know, proven perimeter presences, Billy Donovan started a pretty wonky starting lineup against the Suns. All guys above 6'7". It was Tomas Satoransky, Patrick Williams, I guess, at the 2, Lauri Markkanen at the 3, and then Thad and Vooch. Lauri got off to, or that lineup got off to a great start, jumped out to a 13-6 lead, and actually hung with the Suns in a pretty high-octane scoring game in the first quarter. We're only down 2. And Lauri Markkanen got off to, I was trying to, and in the game, you can obviously succumb to recency bias easily, but I was really trying to think of the best starts that he's had in recent memory. And I couldn't really think of one that I was so like, wow, look at this diversity in his offensive game. He got the free throw line 5 times.
All the things.
He was driving, cutting. He had a mid-range jumper, which is something that he almost never does in any of his career, especially this year. He was dunking, had an and-one finish, had 5 rebounds. You know, it was and one on an offensive rebound to put back where he drew two free throws, and he kind of flew in from the perimeter, and it was like, who is this guy? Our guy Big Dave tweeted out in the middle of the quarter. He was like, who is this guy wearing number 24 for the Bulls? Like, he looks so aggressive. I don't recognize him. And I had to laugh at that because it's true. And then, you know, the Lauri Markkanen thing happened where he finishes the game after having 10 points through one quarter with 16 points. By the end of the game, I believe he was, So he started the game 3 of 4 and then finishes 5 of 13 from the floor. I believe 7 of his 9 field goal attempts from quarters 2 to 4 were threes. So he obviously gets off to that hot start. It wilts as the game goes along. He wasn't on the floor in crunch time until a little bit inside 2 minutes to go. And Billy Donovan subbed him in. Billy Donovan said after the game that he thought he fared as well as he possibly could have in kind of an unideal situation. He's basically playing three. That's a tough position for him. Billy Donovan said that he wanted to see how he looked there. You know, I'm not going to hammer him too hard for that because it's a tight rotation squeeze with just the amount of guys that were missing and everything like that. But what do you make of that Lauri Markkanen performance, Tony? Because when you just look at the scope of it, it really is the essence of Lauri Markkanen, the basketball player. So we've come to know him over the last few years. But, I mean, it was really just amazing to see him in that first quarter. And it's like, oh, my God, is he going to suck us back in again? and then by the end of the game, you're kind of reminded of, you know, just the duality of him.
Yeah, I was just as surprised and shocked as everybody else that was watching the game on Twitter. Like what is this? Like, I'm not used to this with Lauri Markkanen. And, you know, you kind of hoped, right? You kind of figured Zach going down, the lack of scoring options going around. You kind of assumed that, okay, Lauri should, in order for them to be competitive in this game, because they are facing the second best team in the West, that Lauri would have to pick up the scoring pace. And he showed that in the first half, in the first quarter. I was like, yes, this is it. But I know better. Like I know better.
The banana in the tailpipe, you always say.
Banana in the tailpipe. I'm not falling for the banana in the tailpipe. And that's certainly what we got in the second half with Lauri Markkanen. It's something that Bulls fans have grown used to. And here's the thing, and here's the scary thing. I guess I would assume Lauri Markkanen isn't on social media. Going back and watching everybody's tweets about the game. But if you see it, like, nobody really cared in that second. You didn't see any, you know, anger in the second half from fans. Like, where's Lauri? Like, he's not producing. It's like the fan base has become so, empathetic?
Apathetic. You're devoid of emotion. It's the worst. Right. It's the worst place you want to be. Yeah.
Right. It's like, I feel no waves on Lauri Markkanen anymore. And that's the worst place to be about anything. Either the reason why people got up to a point, got so angry and frustrated with Lauri Markkanen is because inherently that means we know he's better than this and he's capable of doing more things than this. But then after a while, it's just kind of like, if he shows up, cool. If he doesn't, whatever. And that's literally the worst place to be in a fan base, and possibly in the eyes of a front office who, you know, you say you want to stick around and you say you want to be a pillar of this team, but it's not just going to be handed to you just because you were a 7th overall pick. You saw what happened to a 7th overall pick. They traded him. So, mm-hmm. Like, this new regime obviously doesn't care where you've been drafted. It's all about, can you produce and help this organization win? And I can't say that for Lauri Markkanen. I don't know if he can help this team win long term just because he's just been so up and down. And for a third-year player who is heading into restricted free agency, you don't feel the urgency. Like, I would have even been cool if his motivation was just to get paid.
Yeah.
Like, I would be fine with that. Like, everybody's here is trying to get paid and you know, get to that next contract. Deion Waiters did it, you know, in Miami, bamboozled them into it. Like, but they, for that one season.
I cannot believe the restrictive free agency bag chase year example. You didn't think of Jimmy Butler with the Bulls. That wasn't the first example you thought. No, it was Deion Waiters in Miami. That is perfect.
Yeah, because he did give him the year, right? He gave him the year. And yeah. I would have been fine if Lauri kind of tricked people into thinking that he was that guy, you know, for a season. But he hasn't even done that. Yeah. So it's just wildly confusing and wildly disappointing for him.
Yeah, he did hint at it. I remember at Media Week or whenever we were talking to them in the preseason or training camp, and the extension deadline was looming, and then it passes. And obviously that's disappointing for him personally because he had said so often that he wanted to be in Chicago long term, and that just kind of kicked that can down the road. He did hint at the fact that he was going to come out kind of not with a vengeance, but just with extra motivation. And I mean, he shot the lights out at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. The problem is when so much of the success is predicated on the shooting, we just know that the reputation of Lauri Markkanen throughout his career is that there are going to be up and down stretches, 10 to 15 game spans where he's shooting 40% from three, 10 to 15 game spans where he's down in the low to mid 30s. And that's kind of closer to where his career marks have landed. So it's tough. I think we got to be careful not to go too far down the line on him not being able to help a team at all. The problem is we're still saddled, obviously, with the expectation versus reality of, okay, this guy was a number seventh overall pick. We know that he wants to be paid in a commensurate way to that. I think we're a little bit past the point of, all right, is this guy a $20 to $25 million a year player? At that price point, it's tough to build a team that he could contribute winning to, especially in as prominent of a role as a $20 to $25 million player would command. But, you know, at a lower price point, who knows, man? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see going into the offseason, especially because although he was back in the starting lineup for the Suns game, it's pretty clear that when the Bulls are back whole again, I mean, even if they had Garrett Temple for this game, I personally, if I was coaching the team, probably would have gone with him on the starting unit just for the perimeter defensive aspect of it. So, you know, they've kind of made their message, or at least, you know, challenged him, whether implicitly or explicitly, with that demotion of sorts. And, you know, you see him come out and respond in the first quarter against the Suns. That's kind of the response that you want to see. That's him saying, or through his play, that he got the message. It fades as the game goes along. And obviously in his first performance off the bench, it wasn't necessarily as inspiring. But you're right. I mean, that's the nature of bringing in a guy like Vucevic. Like, the urgency of the fan base, I think, around Lauri Markkanen's performances and demanding more from him was under the conditions that he was supposed to be a number two option. Now mm-hmm. the Bulls have their 1A, 1B combination when Zach LaVine is healthy, and that urgency is a little bit removed. Now, obviously, the front office isn't making decisions based on, you know, what the fan base thinks,
right,
necessarily. But it does kind of say something about just the feel, the vibe of where Lauri Markkanen is at this point. I'll be interested to see kind of when they're healthy, if he can be a spark off the bench. Because imagine that first quarter stint that he had, you know, checking in at 4 or 5 minutes to go in the first quarter, and the Bulls are kind of in a lull, like that could still have a ton of utility. And his shooting is still super valuable. But it's just the rest of the game is never rounded up.
Like, I just don't see it, man. Like, he's been given every opportunity in every which way. Like, okay, expectation levels are obviously high for him from fan base and from, you know, management, who's spoke well, you know, about him in the times they have spoke about him. But I just, it's been 3 years. It's like, how much longer do you need to show some consistency?
Yeah. That's the thing is, when I'm talking about trying to find the silver lining in it, the silver lining is him as like a sixth man type of like spark plug guy. And that's not what was promised and not how this was supposed to go. You want to take a victory lap on Denzel Valentine as your most improved Bull pick at the start of the season with my guy, Wendell Carter Jr., down in Orlando. Closing games for the Magic. Closed a win over the Clippers, had three blocks in the fourth quarter. Obviously, Kobe White has been up and down and was out for last game. But Denzel, I mean, he giveth and he taketh away. 19 points, team high 18 shots.
Almost took away a ref.
Yeah. I never got a solid replay on that to be able to speak on it totally, but that was a funny moment. And he really he kept the Bulls alive for stretches in that Suns game, but then late in the fourth quarter, there's obviously the two missed threes on that one possession that would have cut it to a 1-point game, and then the turnover of 28 seconds left that basically seals it. So same as this game was kind of the story of Lauri Markkanen, this game was the story of Denzel Valentine as well.
Yeah, Denzel, I mean, he's going to Denzel everywhere. No matter what happens, he's going to be Denzel Valentine. And to a small degree, I respect that.
Yeah.
I respect it. You know, it's just to get the best out of, you need Denzel in small and limited spurts. And it's better to pull the plug early before pulling the plug too late with him. And you got to really be exact with how you want to use him, because he can be effective, you know, in stretches.
Absolutely.
Like, Big Ten player of the year. Like, that's not a, you know, a small feat. Like, he knows how to play basketball. It's just, he does a little bit too much at times. I mean, but that can be probably processed through the lack of kind of after Zach is, well, before the Vucevic trade, it was kind of like, anybody else? And Denzel's like, I got this, guys. But yeah. I mean, that to credit of him, at least he is willing to, you know, step up, take charge sometimes when people who are supposed to be in that position, i.e. Lauri Markkanen, who we just got done talking about, just don't do it consistently enough. So Denzel's like, I got this.
Yeah.
You guys don't know who you're messing with. I'm Denzel Valentine. RP, let's go.
Shout out to Rick Camp, who on Twitter said that if we could just put Denzel Valentine's brain in Lauri Markkanen's head, we'd really be cooking with grease with this Bulls rebuild. We really would be. That is such a fun experience scrolling through the Twitter timeline, because I'm usually not on like my regular timeline during games. I'm just kind of firing off my own things and writing or doing whatever. And then I'll scroll through. And you know how Twitter has the thing where they will bring back old tweets from earlier in the night?
Yeah.
It's especially fun after the Bulls blow a big lead when people are like talking about, oh my God, the Bulls are fun again. This team is amazing. And it's like, you kind of know how that's going to end. But that was a gem from last night. I always thought about it, which is funny. I actually had a thought earlier in the year of if we could put Archie Diacono's brain in Lauri Markkanen's head, what that would look like.
Yeah.
But Denzel might even be a better example of that. He had a good game. That one possession where he kind of over dribbled and then took the leaning floater with two guys on him. Just falling away, and it somehow went in.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Again, that's just perfect. So I think we've covered the losing streak, which, you know, we don't. It's not doomsday yet. The Jazz and the Nets coming up are tough. I think people should be prepared for the reality that this goes to seven games, this losing streak. It might not. I mean, they did put up a good fight against the Suns last night, and it did look like there were times when they could have pulled that game out. But you've got the best offense in NBA history waiting for you on Sunday, and you've got the best team in the NBA waiting for you on Friday. So it's tough. It's tough. And that brings the question of, you know, if this does go to seven games, all of a sudden the Bulls are 10 games under 500. They're 19-27 right now. Mm-hmm. 19-29 is certainly feasible. Now, maybe I'm sure a lot of fans and people with the Bulls would be happy if I just jinx that right now, just even bring up that possibility, and it's very possible I will. It really begs the question of the status of this playoff push that has been kind of advertised since the trade deadline. You know, a lot of the post-deadline press conferences were very, you know, optimistic about making a push, not just for the play-in, but for the playoffs, like that top six. And inexplicably, I mean, they really are kind of in about the same position as they were at the deadline, even as they slip. It seemed to be slipping and slipping and slipping. Two games up on the Raptors, who have lost 9-10, and two games up on the Wizards, who are, you know, I think they did have a two-game winning streak that was snapped with the loss to the Hornets, but they're still the Wizards. They do play the Pistons tonight as we're recording this. So by tomorrow, they might be within a game and a half as you guys are listening to this. So they're two games in the 10th spot, the last spot in the play-in. They're also four games out of sixth, which is where the Knicks currently sit right now. So, it's unbelievable to think about, but as moribund of these last five games have been, and as tough as the Jazz and Nets matchups coming up could be, the schedule kind of softens from there. You get the Pacers, you get the Hawks, I think you get the Wolves in there. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but there's a stretch in April where they play a lot of teams kind of in their area code in the East. They play a lot of teams that there's no team beneath the Bulls, but there are teams that are more winnable games than maybe some of the games that we've seen recently. And there really is a chance that if they can get everybody healthy, that they could make a run here. So, Tony, what do you think? I mean, it's hard to kind of remove what we've seen for the last five games. We're kind of projecting what this team is going to look like when they are able to gel a little bit more. But are the hopes of this group with the trade deadline injections getting up to that six, seven seed range. Is that past your scope of vision right now? Or are you just kind of, let's see if we can hang around in the play-in territory right now and like maybe muck some stuff up in a single elimination kind of environment?
Yeah, I think the play-in should be the more realistic view of this versus an outright playoff berth. Just because just the defense is just so bad. And it's like, how much better can it get from being just god-awful? It could be just plain awful, maybe. And then that'll, you know, in the offense can kind of surpass, you know, in some spaces. But those other teams, like, this isn't... See, the thing is, I think we may have been tricked a little bit at the beginning of the season where teams are still trying to figure things out. But in the back half of the season where... Because of this play-in tournament, everybody is kind of everybody within range are fighting for the same spots that you're fighting for. You're getting a more playoff feel from these teams trying to get playoff ready in the second half of the season. So teams aren't messing around anymore. You're not going to catch anybody off guard. Like that's it. Teams know who you are. They know how inconsistent most of your players are, and they figured we only got to guard Zach. And kind of, you know, at least defend Vucevic, but make sure Zach doesn't score and your team is dead. So once the game plan is out, it's like, okay, how do you guys adjust to that? And I'm also looking at, you know, and I know he hasn't been a part of the critiques so far this season because we've given him like a long rope to kind of deal with this, but I'm looking at Billy Donovan too. Like, how does he adjust, you know, to this high-pressure situation now that his bosses – have basically put him in a position to, all right, man, you got to start winning games now. Like, how does he handle that pressure? And there have been some misses, and I'm not going to lie, there have been some makes. You know, like, he comes off well in pre-games and post-games and stuff, like, he explains himself well. But when it's time to play the game and it's the fourth quarter and you're losing leads, all the times that they have, it's not just the players anymore.
Like, exactly.
It's got to be you at some point on how you motivate these players. How do you get them in the right spaces mentally to be prepared to not lose these games, these closer games? And we've come to a point where we've kind of exhausted every opinion on the roster that we have, right? Like, we've gone out of our way to find things to discuss about the team and the players and not really talk about the coaching staff and the lack of execution on some games. But now I think as it gets closer to that winning time, as the season kind of winds down, we got to start looking at you, man.
I agree with you. I think there have been some little rotational things over the last couple weeks that, you know, you could quibble with too, in terms of concrete stuff. I'm willing, again, we're giving Billy a long rope because it's the first year here and he obviously inherited a lot of this roster. So, and now with the trade deadline, in terms of rotational stuff, it's like, you're just trying stuff out and seeing what works for a time. But now that there are more veterans in the building, like you said, now that the expectation has been set, like Billy, Darnell asked him a question. Darnell Mayberry at The Athletic asked him a question the other day about kind of what it was like to contend with, and I'm paraphrasing, kind of the elevating of expectations after the trade deadline acquisitions that they made. Mm-hmm. And Billy kind of pushed back on it and said, the expectations have always been what they are. Like, we're always trying to build a championship standard, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is, like, with those additions and with the vets now in the building, like, the Bulls are 10-15 in games that are within a 5-point margin with 5 minutes or less to play. A lot of those involve blown leads. Like you said, at some point that comes back on the coach. Billy has taken a degree of responsibility for it, but from the external side of it, from us, from fans, from whoever, that can certainly be something that intensifies over the next few weeks or months. Defensively, mental lapses are obviously on the player. Scheme stuff, you know, at some point, you know, you're reading, reacting, like there are miscues that are on the player, but defensively, like I said earlier in the podcast, like he's a better offensive coach than a defensive coach. The defense got better to a degree for a stretch before the trade deadline. But now it's a question of, well, was that soft competition? Was that, you know, a variety of different factors? Like, can he coach up this group that is a little bit limited to being a respectable enough defensive team that they can get to that next level. I think you're certainly right to point that light on him. I think he would take accountability for it too, and has at certain points. But it'll be interesting because it's almost the inverse of last season, right? Where it's like, and this is what we said from the start of the year, like this year was going to reveal things about the roster that maybe were clouded heading into the season. Now we've kind of got a good deal more clarity on certain players that are here, certain players that are not. And now it's time to look at the coaching staff, the front office too. And yeah, it'll be a really instructive stretch down the stretch of the season for that reason. The last, I mean, we're looking really far ahead right now, but Tony, the last four games that the Bulls have here in a stretch of six nights, home for the Nets, home for the Raptors, who knows what's going on with the Raptors. Then they go road for the Nets and then back home for the Bucks. Those are the last four games of the season. So if they're in a situation where it's like, we need to win three of our last four, all four of our last four, two of our last four to get into a more advantageous playoff position, it'll be very interesting to see kind of how they handle that stretch towards the end of the season. And there's a lot of murky stuff in between there too. So all interesting stuff to watch. Quickly before we go, we'll do an injury update. We actually didn't hear from the Bulls today. They didn't practice today. So we don't have an update in terms of if Zach LaVine, Coby White, or Garrett Temple will return tomorrow. What we do know is that Zach is dealing with that sprained ankle. He played for two games, struggled, scored. You know, he's not going to use it as an excuse. We aren't here to make excuses for him. But he, you know, in those two games that he played after he sprained it against the Cavs, he scored 30 total points and shot 10 of 31 from the field. Like, that's just, you can play poorly. That is uncharacteristic for the way that Zach LaVine has played this season, especially the first two games with Vooch. So I don't know whether he'll play tomorrow. I would personally be surprised. And if it was me, I probably would want to see him rest up until it is 100%. Maybe it is 100% tomorrow, but we'll see. Coby White dealing with some neck pain. Billy Donovan seemed to think that he slept on it funny or something like that. He's missed now two games, I believe. So we'll see if he's back. And then Garrett Temple, someone who sneakily, I just think they missed so badly in that Phoenix game and will miss until he comes back because of the way that he does fight through screens, competes defensively. And, you know, the shooting is up and down, but if it's on, that's certainly a help in that department too. So he's dealing with a hamstring issue and we'll see what the update is on him. Got any parting thoughts? I think that's pretty much all we got here.
Yeah, no, that's all. I think that's all we need. I mean, I'm very interested to see how they play in these coming games. Because it is winning time. They set the precedent now. They got the fan base excited with their trade that they planted their flag. And it's been disappointing so far. And I think Bulls fans have been fairly, like, cool up to now. Like, if you notice, like, on Twitter and stuff, like, nobody's, like, overreacting or, you know, or anything, which is fine. But that's coming to a head, you know, especially if they lose seven straight. And it's like,
So that's the quality of competition, the integrating new guys into schemes and like guys learning how to play with each other. I think that gives you a little bit of rope and it's deserved certainly. But we'll see. I mean, you know, it just can't go on much longer than this. And the other thing is just the quality of competition recently has been a step up from what the Bulls were dealing with kind of earlier in the season. There of course is another issue. The fact that they're 3-18 against teams that enter the games that they're playing at or above 500. That's a problem. They got to start stacking, not just wins, but quality wins. If there's going to be a level of faith that the direction that they've chosen here is one that is actually feasible. But again, I said this earlier in the podcast, we will wait until, or I at least will wait until Zach LaVine is back 100% and we kind of see what these guys all look like together to make final judgments. It's just this 2020-21 season where they're playing games every other day. It doesn't give you much time to be patient. Like that's the thing. 26 games left. It's coming. They're coming fast and furious. And you know, the Bulls will have every opportunity to, prove that they are the team that they want to be and that they think they can be. And I will be fascinated to see if they can do it. So Jason, KC, hope we made you proud. Hope you made it this far. If you didn't, I completely understand.
We didn't say anything bad. So we didn't get anybody in trouble.
And to the listeners who made it this far, we promise they will be back next week for Tuesday's episode. We look forward to that. We look forward to checking out some Bulls basketball over the weekend at the Jazz on Friday and then home for the Nets on Sunday. As we've talked about, should be an instructive stretch here for myself, for Tony Gill, for Commander/Captain Brad. Thank you for listening and for watching, if you're watching us on YouTube, to the Bulls Talk Podcast, and we'll catch you guys later. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube on Fridays. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. Make sure to tune into NBC Sports Chicago at 7:30 p.m. tonight for Bulls pregame live in advance of a matchup with the Utah Jazz.